Go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back at last night's, should I say, easy victory for Liverpool in the last 16 of the Europa League. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined tonight by Tom Keegan, Pete Warburton, and Mike Wilson. So, where shall I start? I'll start with you, Pete, tonight. We had to go at naming the team. On the last podcast, and I think it's fair to say that the team was a lot stronger than we all expected.
Yeah, definitely. I was pleased to see that as well. I'm always of the old school that you win your game first and then you make your changes rather than have to make your changes if you're struggling. And I know we were 5-1 up in the first leg, but we were talking on the way down to the ground and we were saying they played too many of the fringe players. And suddenly Sparta get a goal or two early on, that's when the jitters kick in. So I was really pleased to see the start. I know some people thought maybe Adrian may have started in goal, but when I saw the lineup, it was nice to see Bobby Clark getting a start as well. He's been playing well when he's come onto the pitch. But other than that, you know, they're all first-team players that played last night. So, yeah, I was really glad to see how strong it was and obviously, the selection was vindicated by the performance.
Tom, were you happy with the team that he selected? Did you think he'd gone a little bit too strong, or are you of the old school like probably me and Peter, where you go out, you get the job done, and then you start rotating the players?
I was glad he put a strong side out, Les. I wanted to do it quickly so that we could get it sorted out. Probably go. I didn't anticipate 4 goals in the first 12 minutes, but to get it over with quickly so that we could rest, take players off and then rest them in between so they wouldn't be stretched out. It worked out quite well, really, by him doing that. So I think it was vindicated with the strong side. I think don't think too many people would have been disappointed with the side.
Mike, it was a really strong team, and apart from Bobby Clark, he was the only one really who was the less experienced. But then, because I think we now think of the likes of Kwanzaa and Bradley as sort of first team sort of squad members now, don't they? And when you see them on the team sheet, you don't sort of think twice about it.
I didn't even think twice about Bobby Clark, really, to be honest. I like the fact that he will play the youngsters, and he actually plays them not as a, I'm going to give them a run out. He plays them as in he thinks, do you know what? They're the right person for this team. I guess we'd have been having a different conversation if we'd have come off with 2 injuries, wouldn't we? But to keep us playing the way that we're playing, he still made changes. He still made a few changes. Brought in the likes of he brought in Clark, and actually, I'm a great believer that these kids, when they come in, they learn a lot more playing alongside Szoboszlai and Endo and people like that than if he'd been brought into a midfield that also had McConnell and others in it. So I think it's just another part of their education, but we got the job done.
Pete, it's fair to say, isn't it, that the likes of Robbo, Mo and Szoboszlai, needed to get more minutes into the legs to get the rhythm back. Because obviously, with these lads, they're all class acts, but when you've been out for such a long time, it does take them a few games to get back to the level that we know they're capable of. So I was quite pleased when the team dropped to see those three especially, in the starting lineup.
Yeah, and I think out of the ones you mentioned, I mean, I think they all had good games, but I think it was a perfect game for Mo last night. He wasn't overextended, he obviously from being 5-1 up, we were comfortable at kickoff in fairness, but he just had one of them games. I suppose you could class his second half as a quiet game. He didn't have to chase back, he didn't have to extend himself, but it was the perfect game for Mo to come back into and you know, get those minutes on the pitch. Szoboszlai had a good game as well last night. He was flitting about. And even when Kostas come on, another one who, you know, he came on at half time and he played well. So it was a comfortable game, as I say. I don't think there was any doubt really. And that's without being unkind to Sparta, but you know, at kickoff time we all expected to go through. Probably we didn't expect to go through as comfortable as it was really. But yeah, it was a good workout, and I think it showed more in the second half, because I think we got the sixth goal 10 minutes into the second half, and then after that it was a bit. I know their keeper made a couple of decent saves, but I think we used it as more like a training session, really, just to get fitness into the legs of these lads who've been out.
Tom, it was a brilliant start, wasn't it? And, you know, four goals, I think it was, in the first, you know, 13 and a half minutes. You know, and I started, my mind started going back when I was, you know, stood on the cop there, as to when my dad took me to the game against Stromgodset in 1974, and we actually beat them 11-0. So after 30 minutes, I actually thought that record could be, you know, under threat, really. And, you know, we could be seeing a new record European score at Anfield. But it was a tremendous start, wasn't it? And like, you know, it was so good, really, if the game wasn't already put to bed in the first leg, it certainly was, you know, not so much after 13 minutes, but after about the first six or seven.
Yeah, I think Mike made a really good point there about what he was saying about, you know, like the young kids coming in about and how they train with the first team, don't they? So what the first team are asked to do, the young kids are asked to do. So when they just come in, they just step into that role. I thought that was a good point what Mike made. And that's what makes the youth, our squad, so talented at the moment right across the board. That the level doesn't drop at all when these kids come in. And that's the secret, really. When we go on to, you know what you were saying, Les, the start was unbelievable. The first goal, it was more or less, you know, like it was a class goal, wasn't it, to be honest? It was a really good finish. First of all, they were saying, like, they were like, it was a missed kick. You know, you felt it was a missed kick, but it was a beautiful goal by Nunes. And then I think Bobby Clark, you know, he's growing week by week, game by game, every time he plays. Each time he come in, he looked a little bit, you know, like a little bit, a couple of minutes to get adjusted to a game, and looked a little bit shy of the second, you know, like the environment he was in. And then as time goes by, I thought he was superb yesterday. His pressing was like, you know, like a senior pro, wasn't it? And he well deserved, you know, like the press that he'd done for the second goal was just sensational. You know, so everything about every bounce and his goal, his finish. So like just overall, as you say, as soon as the second goal went in, it was all over, wasn't it? We were 7-1 up at that stage with like three quarters of a game to go, like, but the game was over.
Yeah, Mike, it was really good to see Bobby Clark, you know, get his first goal for the club, because that will do his confidence no harm at all moving forward, as will the goals for Mo and Cody Gakpo, because Cody especially had had a little bit of a rough time in front of goal recently. So to get on the score sheet in the first, you know, 10, 13 minutes last night, and then another a goal for Mo, you know, which meant that he'd now scored 20 goals in each of the seasons that he's been at the club, which is seven on the bounce. You know, it might seem a strange comment to make, but even for the likes of Mo, you know, with his goal scoring record, it's important, isn't it, to get that first one when you've been missing from the side for a little bit, you know, and get yourself back up and running again, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Mo scored in the first leg. I still can't believe that one was disallowed for offside. As much as I've seen it, it just didn't look it. But, yeah, I mean, Matt, it was weird because Mo seemed to play that game at half pace. I know he was actually told to play it at half pace later on, but he seemed to play that just within himself. And yet he was still superb. That ball through for the Gakpo offside goal was an absolute gem. He was still superb. He's still an unbelievable player, even at half pace, isn't he?
He is, Mike. He is. But yeah, Pete, you know, the first 20 minutes, you know, then it was just a case of, well, you know, how many are we going to get? And you think, you know, we now wanted the players to sort of just start to take it easy now, just make sure they don't get injured. And the next thing you see is Nunes belting back from his own from his own half to win a throw in front of the main stand ultras at the Kop end, and then giving the crowd the G up when we're 4-0 up. What a character he is.
I was a bit surprised. I mean, Sparta Prague are top of their league. And I think last night, I'm not too sure on the international scene, but I believe there was about 7 or 8 internationals playing in that team last night. And yeah. I was a little bit surprised the way they approached it, because, as I say, everyone, including themselves, must have known the game was up after the first leg. But the two goals, the Nunes goal was well worked, and he pulled away nicely for Szoboszlai to pull the ball back to him. But the Bobby Clark goal and the Mo Salah goal, they were just coming and harry-carry at the back. We couldn't believe it because we're down that end of the pitch and so what the hell are they doing? They're trying to play like lovely football inside their own box. And it was just beyond me, to be honest. And then me and the lad next to me were having a go at Cody Gakpo's pink boots. And literally on cue, Adam said to me, He better play well with them boots, that colour. And as he said that, he put the fourth in. But the only game I can liken it to in recent memory was that Arsenal game where we started off like a train, you know. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised about Spartan, and I think it was noticeable. I think after the fourth goal, we all got into a huddle as if to say, right, you know, let's stop all this messing about and just, you know, play the simple games. But even after the fourth goal, I think Nunes missed the sitter, didn't he? Where he put one over from 3 or 4 yards out. Yeah. But like you say, it was a perfect game for us last night, where people coming back from fitness got a good run out. And we were able to integrate, you know, from the kickoff, Bobby Clark. And then later on, you know, McConnell came on. The only unfortunate thing was the Kwanzaa got a book and the Musoloski came on late as well. So it was nice to see them kids get integrated as well. But it was the perfect game. It was good from start to finish, apart from the goal we gave away, really.
Yeah, the other game it reminded me of, Tom, was the semi-final second leg in 2001. You know, when we were, I think, 2-1 down from the first leg and come back and we blitzed them. In the first, even Igor Bishkan scored in that game.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
But as Pete said there, you know, the after 13 minutes, it was job done. You know, they did commit harry-carry a little bit at the back, but, you know, I think part of that was due to the way we were pressing them. You know, and they're not used to being pressed by such quality opposition. And, you know, once that fourth one went in, then it was just the case then of either how many, all right, it's now job done. Just let's treat this as a training session. We got a little bit sloppy and let them back in to get a consolation goal just before half time, and that'll be a memory that the lad who scored that goal will have forever and a day, and their fans, you know, celebrated it like it was the winning goal, didn't they?
Yeah, I think all the damage was done away, wasn't it, Les? We broke them in the away leg. I think when they come to play that type of football, and you know what, we've gone back I think what you said then just then is a really good point. We've gone back to being like the pressing team that we first were when Jürgen, you know, when we were a young side, when he first, his 2018 side, the 2019 side, when we pressed them and we were relentless. Teams couldn't get away from us, you know. I think with the young players we've got in our midfield, that's what we've gone like again. We even done it to Manchester City, didn't we? We pressed the life out of them. And I think they were trying to play the ball around the box like they probably do in their own league. But like, they didn't have to nowhere near to take time and the space. And they was, you know, like they were given, as Peter said, they were committing and he carry like every time the ball went forward. But you know, I was glad we sort of took our foot off it. No, the only concern for me in the going towards half time when he got the goal, which I thought I was made up they got a goal because their fans were sensational over the two legs. They were incredible. You know, like the support he gave to the team was unbelievable. You know, like, and it shows how big a club we are that teams come down here and just, it's the occasion of coming here. But like, you know, so for that, but the only thing that worried me was Joe Gomez appeared. You know, like he seemed to step awkwardly over the ball, stretching. And he looked like he'd strained himself, you know, like, and automatically you're thinking, oh my God, that's Joe out for about, you know, like another 3 months, 4 months. But like, as it turned out, hopefully it's not too bad. And we took him off like as a precaution.
Yeah, Mike. So 4-1 up at half time. And the subs come out and on come, you know, three changes at half time. Harvey Elliott coming on, Tsimikas coming on. And who else come on at half time?
McConnell.
But McConnell come on at half time, yeah. That's right. And off went Endo. God, I'm forgetting who went off now.
Gomez and Darwin.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And you know, it was three changes that you expected. I think the only surprise really was that maybe Mo didn't go off, but Mo just needed the minutes, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I think there was always a plan for Mo to go off, but unfortunately with Bobby Clark getting injured, that never was able to happen, was it? Yeah. I do think that would have been the substitution, whether that would have been Dan's or Musilewski or Kay Gordon that came on. I don't know, but it was always the plan. And so, yeah, he probably... They do this, though, didn't they? Szoboszlai, in a previous game, he got 60 minutes. They build up, don't they? You get half a game, you get 60 minutes, and then you get a full game, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, so, Peter, then as you said before, you're within 10 minutes of the second half, you know, we scored another couple of goals and you know, it was just then just hoping that the final whistle will come and there'd be no more little injuries before the weekend.
Yeah, that's the same. We scored two pretty early, didn't we? I know Szoboszlai took a bit of a wicked deflection, in fairness. And from where I was sitting, I thought Harvey had scored the sixth.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I got outside and was talking to someone in the pub after that, he said, oh no, Gakpo got a touch from that. But I noticed when they were running back to the halfway line to face up for the kickoff, Gakpo was pointing to the bench, tapping his chest as if to say, that's my goal. You know, after that, it was sort of, you know, if it was easy prior to that, it was even easier after that. And it was just a case of keeping possession of football. And, staying out of harm's way, really, you know, staying out of trouble. And then Gerald Quansah got a harsh yellow card and his manager got one at the same time. The referee wasn't taking any truck off Klopp. But I thought it looked a fair tackle, in all honesty. But every time the players, in games like that with a big game coming up, and in fairness now, every game is a big game for us, regardless if it's Man United or Fulham or whoever we're going to play in the future, you know. They're all big games and you wince a bit when some of these tackles are going in. But I thought he had another good game last night, Gerald Quansah. He wasn't overly tested, but he looked very assured at the back. And I think we just played out the last 40 minutes or so, just keeping possession as best we could. And We did create a few chances. As I say, their keeper made a couple of decent saves after that. But generally, it was just, take it easy, lads, and don't get injured.
Yeah, and then with about 25 minutes to go, I think Klopp decides that the Virgil needs to get some minutes in his legs. Everybody around me in the cup are saying, why the hell is he putting Virgil on? He should be telling them to go home now and go to bed rather than them to have a run round for half an hour. And then finally, he gave Musiałowski a few minutes when Bobby Clark got a knock on his ankle. So, yeah, it was a surprise, wasn't it, Tom, to see Virgil sort of warming up and then stripped and ready to come on and replace in Jerick Kwanza.
It was a big shock, that, Les, wasn't it, really? I didn't anticipate. I thought he was going to be like Diaz and McAllister, where, like he gave them a complete rest, But it was surprising, really, to see him come on. But I think Joe going off probably upset that a little bit. Probably that was one of the reasons. And with Jerick Kwanza getting booked, I suppose he thought, we don't want him, we don't want to lose a man, down and then get anyone sent off. So he probably took Jerick off and thought it was worth. I don't even think Verge had to break sweat, did he? He was only, I think he just come on and jogged around, really. And then jogged back off. But, it was a surprise to see him come on. To see him come on.
What did you make of Robbo at centre-half, Tom?
He done all right, didn't he? But then again, to be fair, he never put us under any real pressure, did he, to be honest? So I wouldn't like to see him play there very often, Les, to be fair. even with Virgil next to him, to be honest. But no, we make the podcast and we chat all through this season and we've said, we're a good side and, we're doing really well. And if we're anywhere near the top of the league we're dancing through the FA Cup. We've won the League Cup. We're waltzing through the Europa League. You're just looking at 10 games and you're thinking, this side with a bit of luck and with bodies coming back, this could be an incredible finish to the season. When someone said to me, well, I was talking to a fella today as well, I was at work when I was having a chat to him at that, and we were saying, he said, it's unusual for the team to win the four, he said, and the way I feel at the moment, he said, I was sitting there thinking to myself, we might have to sacrifice one to win the other three. And I was thinking, I thought to myself, I don't know. I think we're capable. Man City's still in the FA Cup. And of course, we've still got to go away to Manchester United. But I don't fear any of them. Like the same in the, someone saying about the Europa League, saying, Leverkusen got a really tough draw, But I think looking at them with people coming back as well, I think we're better than all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, it was just nice at the end, wasn't it, to get the job done, 11-2 on aggregate, and you're walking out the ground looking forward to the draw and, being really happy that we got through a game that the players had gone on and done what they were asked to do, and touch wood, no more injuries, and we could look forward to the game against Manchester United on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading earlier that this is our biggest aggregate in European games since 1980. Was that Ulu Palacera or something like that? I don't know. But I mean, to be honest, I think we all knew that we were going to go through after the first leg. I think in both games, their defence was awful. I think in the problem with the first game is their attack was quite useful, but it wasn't yesterday. So it was all very easy. It was all exhibition stuff. Biggest thing by the end was making sure we got no injuries, and hopefully we haven't got any injuries out of that. So apart from maybe Bobby Clark, but
he's all right.
Said he was all right, didn't he? So yeah, so it's good. Yeah, hopefully Canate back now, and you know, so yeah, it's a good position, and as you said before, you know, you look at. We know there are good teams in the Premier League, but we don't fear any of them. You look at the Europa League and think, yeah, there's some decent teams in there, but you know, we should be backing ourselves to beat them.
Yeah.
So, got to be positive.
So, I'll start with you on this one, Pete. Who is your player of the match?
I think there are a few good performances, but I wanted sort of to pick someone who probably didn't play the full 90, at least played majority of it. As I say, Quonset had a good game. My Hungarian mate had a good game, Szoboszlai. But I think overall, and not just with the two goals, I thought Cody Gakpo had one of his best games for Liverpool last night. I thought he was good. He was coming deep, picking the ball up, running at people, gliding past them. So I'd probably go with Cody Gakpo last night.
Tom, who are you going for?
You know what? I think Cody Gakpo's a good shout there. I thought Mo, as I think it was Mike said earlier, I thought Mike, I think Salah had done, without being sensational, done his usual class act, you know, like, so Szoboszlai done well at Giral concert. Thought, but you know what I'm going to go for? Bobby Clark. I think the lad, he ran himself into the ground yesterday. Thought he was brilliant, you know. I thought his pressing. He pressed the ball like a senior pro, you know. Like I'm just really impressed with his work rate and his passing and his overall commitments. So I want to give it to little Bobby Clark.
Who are you going for, Mike?
So I'm gonna give it to Gakpo, but I'm gonna give it on the basis that I just see him as everybody's whipping boy at the moment. He just seems to be a bit of a whipping boy. But he works so hard, scored two decent goals, you know, but he works and he worked really, really hard. The one player I'd like to mention, never particularly in consideration for Man of the Match, but Harvey Elliott came on in the second half and he just was, whatever position they put him in, he was trying to add drive into it. I thought he played really well. I thought it was quite unlucky when Gakpo flicked his shot in. But
I think when I seen that back on the highlights, I think his shot was going wide.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was. But Tom, you shook your head at that.
I agree with you, Mike. I think he used that.
All right.
I think for the 20-year-old, I wrote something on tweets the other day. I wrote some him and Curtis this season have been sensational. Saved us at the club an absolute fortune. I think both of them are sensational players. I think he's really, really unlucky not to be added in the England squad when you see players going through. I think he's brilliant. I think he acts like a senior player and he's younger than Conor Bradley. And I think you know, we all had our doubts of, not so much. We didn't really have doubts about him. But lots of people have said, you know, like, we didn't know where his best position was. But you know what? He's a sensational little player and he's only going to get better and better. And you know, someone said to me the other day, do you know, like, he plays the game like Jack Wilshere, but he's more effective and he's more skillful and he's quicker. And I think that's not a bad shout. I think he's that type of player. He's a busy little player. He makes things happen. He's always got an eye for a pass. You know, when things are going rough, he grabs the game like a senior pro. I totally agree with you, Mike. I thought he was sensational.
But there are aspects of him that remind me of Peter Beardsley. Different position and all that kind of thing, but But Beardsley never hid when he was out of form. And Harvey never hides when he's out of form. And Harvey will often try passes that don't come off. And there'll be three or four passes on a run that don't come off. But he never, ever lets his head down. He just cracks on. Yeah. And at some point, he's playing like the play. I said to my wife, I said, Harvey's our playmaker in this second half, isn't he? He's the one that's trying to make everything tick. And I just thought he came on and he was wide left and then he dropped into midfield. He was all over the place. I loved it. But
yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought he'd come on. He was unlucky not to score with his right foot as well. The keeper made a hell of a save, you know, in front of the cop. But my man of the match would have been Szoboszlai. I just thought throughout the 90 minutes, he pressed, he created, he scored with the help of a deflection. And I just thought he looked as though, you know, he's getting closer and closer and closer to being back to 100% fit. So, and like you lads, I thought Cody Gakpo had a really good game. And as I said at the start, I was really pleased for him that he scored because he'd been going through one of those periods that all forwards have. I agree with Mike. He has become a little bit of a whipping boy, you know, to some people. And why do you need a whipping boy in this side and this squad? I don't know, because everybody is coming in and doing a job. And, you know, they should get behind all the players because whenever they're called upon, they're coming in and giving it all for the fans, the shirt, the club, the manager, the teammates. And that's all you can ask for. And look where they're taking us. They're taking us on one hell of a journey. So I will move on and say, just I'll have a little bit of chat about Jürgen's press conference today. And I'll come to you, Pete, on this one. You know, in the press conference today, Jürgen said that Curtis Jones should definitely be back for the game against Brighton. The Gravenberches should be available for the squad on Sunday. It's still touch and go about Konaté for Sunday, but if he doesn't make Sunday, he should certainly be fit for after the international break. Curtis and Jota should be available for the league game against Manchester United. And Stefan Pešetić is going through a pre-season programme at the minute. And all being well, he should join in team training as well after the international break. And should be available to be part of the squad, you know, sometime in early April. So that's really positive news, isn't it, Pete? He did mention Alisson, by the way, before anybody asked. He did mention Alisson before anybody asked on that one. But I just suppose that was because he'd given an update on Alisson the last week, and he just mentioned the outfield players, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I don't want to be Job's comforter, but there's an international break on the horizon, and as good it is to see Joe Gomez being appreciated by the England setup, there's going to be others going away as well, and you just don't want those lads to get fit and then another couple get injured. Hopefully, in 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have a full squad to pick from, and it's like I was saying before, every game now is, you know, it's the old cliche, but every game's becoming a cup final again, isn't it? It's like that season when we were going on four fronts again. So every game is a massive game, and the more personnel we've got, the better. But it's just a shame that I think Tom mentioned it maybe last time. We tend to get injuries that aren't just like a little knock and they're out for one game. They're out for a month at a time. Mm. We're getting some really bad injuries. But if we can get them back, and especially with Jota up front, because as well as we're scoring and we're sharing the goals around the pitch with midfielders weighing in as well, it'll be great to see Jota back in the fold, because he's just like one of the best finishers I've seen, to be honest. He is just an out-and-out finisher. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see them back. This little break now, if they're not fit enough to go on international duty, it'll give them a bit more time to recuperate and do the workout at Kirby rather than going away. So, yeah, let's hope everyone comes back from international duty fit and healthy and strength, and we've got a really strong squad to pick from.
That is good news, though, isn't it, Tom? What come out from Jürgen's press conference today? Your fingers crossed you know, the rehab, and as Pete says there, you know, the players going away on international duty all come back unscathed, because then, you know, it puts us in a really, really good place to attack the rest of the season, doesn't it?
Oh my God, Les, imagine having, you know, six or seven midfielders to pick from, you know, like, to, you know, like when we're going away to the likes of like Aston Villa, and we're going away to Everton and Manchester United, if you've got like a full strength, fit, 100% hungry squad, you've had a rest, you know, some of the players coming back with like five players up front, all scoring goals, you know, it gives you that massive boost. And that's what we're talking about, these 10 games, you know, like win the 10 games and we've won the league, you know. Because I can't see Arsenal winning 10 games, and I can't see City winning 10 games. But if Liverpool win 10 games, I think that'll be it. And like, there's four games that you look at, and imagine with a full strength squad, it's going to be, you know, like, it's going to be amazing to have them back, especially a player like Stefan Bacetic. You know, like, we forget how brilliant that kid was, you know. You know, and like all of a sudden to have, you know, like choices at that, to fresh legs, and you can bring people in. And that brings us to a point where we'll have to do a podcast in the next couple of weeks, you know, when we're talking about it, about the best 11, because what is the best 11? You know, like, it's now, you've no idea, have we? You know,
no, I mean, I think Tom's made a good point there, Mike, hasn't he? Where, you know, I think if you turn the clock back sort of 2 years, where we were going for, you know, on four fronts again, and we just sort of fell short at the last minute, I think that was partly due to them, you know, running out of steam a little bit. But when you think about it now, you know, to say that, you know, for us to be able to sit here tonight and say that Conor Bradley's come into the team and you haven't really missed Trent. You know, if we'd have missed Trent 2 years ago, you know what I mean? The drop-off would have been, you know, so big. You know, you haven't had, you know, Robbo has hardly, you know, he hasn't reached his level. You know, since he's been injured, he's been out for so long. You've had, you know, Jarrell Kwanzaa come in the side and has sort of looked as though he's a seasoned centre-back. You know, Endo, nobody had ever heard of him this time last year, and now he's come into the side, and not only is he a bit of a cult hero, but he's a great, great footballer. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got depth all over the place. And could you imagine sort of going back 2 years, if we'd have had the number of injuries that we'd have had this season, the team wouldn't have been able to cope. But this year, they've coped. And as you mentioned before, you know, players like Bobby Clark have come in, Jadon Dans, you know, in the last round of the FA Cup after the Cup final, you know, he comes on and scores two goals that gets us through in that competition. And he's been rewarded today with a new long-term contract. So, as you can see, there's so much depth there now. It just gives you confidence going forward, doesn't it, Mike?
Yeah, when you compare the two seasons where we're going for four trophies, we had injuries that season, and the constant injuries, but there were kids in the academy that he could trust. And that's been the absolute crux of this, that he's been able to go, well, I'm going to bring in some lads who aren't even in the Premier League 25, and I'm going to trust them, and they're at that level. And so you know, it is a level of luck and the brilliance of our academy that we've been able to do that. And it then gives you volume of players, doesn't it? Because, yeah, we've looked at our bench at some times and gone, yeah, it looks a bit weak, doesn't it? But actually, now you look at it and go, I was a bit disappointed Jadon Dans didn't come on the other day, you know, because it would have been great to see him come on playing down the middle, especially when Darwin went off. But you've got that desire. I always like to see Bobby Clark in the team because I'm a bit of a fan. And that's the difference. And now as we start to get numbers back, the psyche of players, when you've got a few injuries, you go into games and going, I must not get injured. And when you get all your players back and everyone's fit, the psyche of players goes from that to, I must play well. Because if I don't play well, I won't be picked. And that that level of competition means that our bar for our performances stays high. And the kids have come in and done that to the level where you've probably got Harvey going, these kids are coming in now. I've got to step it up. And he's stepping it up. Mm. So it's just brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. Les, can you just mention someone else as well?
Yeah, please.
Because a few weeks ago, I think he was mentioned in an interview by Jürgen. And I think a few people raised their eyebrows and laughed a bit because he called Quaveen number two in the world. And I tell you what, we haven't mentioned him, but have we missed Alisson at all? Since Quaveen's
not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
In the big games as well, Peter.
Fantastic.
Isn't it? Two games against Chelsea, one in the league and one in the final.
Yeah. The saves he made in the final, the saves he made at Nottingham Forest. He's been fantastic.
He made the save last week against Manchester City in the second half, where he flew out of his goal.
Yeah.
I think it was from Phil Foden.
Yeah.
And honest to God, if they'd have showed you that and he said name the goalkeeper without showing a picture of the goalkeeper in a situation like if what happened next, you would have said that's a save by Alisson because it was that good a save and he was that quick off his line. So you're 100% right. And the other thing it proves is that earlier in the season, you know, as Mike mentioned before about, you know, Cody getting a little bit of stick and being a scapegoat, you have people sort of turning around and saying, he's not good enough, Kells. He's not good enough anymore. He had a really good season two seasons ago and he did what he did, but that was just a flash in the pan. And I think it shows that whether you play as a goalkeeper or you play as an outfield player, you've got to get games under your belt to get your sharpness back. And that's been the key for Kelleher, is to play game after game after game. And that's got him to the level that he's been. And you are right. You know, Jürgen's got a decision to make because, you know, when Ali is fit, he's the best goalkeeper in the world, but he'd be coming in cold. So do you have to ease him in saying that? I don't know, because as you both said, and you know, all night here on this podcast, you know, every game, once the international break is done, every game is a must-win game. So how does Ali get his sharpness back? You know what I mean? But because he is the best in the world, so you want the best in the world in your goal, but you need your best in the world to be sharp, don't you?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So, Tom, just before we move on and we talk about the Europa League draw that was made today, I just wanted your thoughts on the Champions League draw, and not so much the whole of the draw, but the games involving the 115ers and Arsenal. And what I mean by that is, I just want to think, you know, the 115ers have been drawn against Real Madrid and Arsenal have been drawn against Bayern Munich. Now, two tough ties for them there. And then if they both get through, then they play each other in a semi-final. Do you think that draw is a good one for us in terms of our Premier League battle with the 115ers and Arsenal? Because obviously now they've got, you know, at least two more difficult games and possibly, you know, playing against each other.
Just think, Les, if they both get to the Champions League semi-final, right, they're going to play two games within a week. So you're going to get three matches, you know, like they're going to get a league match where they're going to have to build up before they go into it. The game in between it and the game after, you know, the game before the second leg. So, like, you know what? Imagine they're going to have to rest players, and he will rest players to get to the Champions League, because Arsenal, as much as they'd love to win the league, they'd love to win the Champions League. You know what I mean? And you couldn't have picked a better. You couldn't have picked a better draw, could you? Really, even the game against Bayern Munich is like they're going to be two really tough games. So who are they playing in between? I think it's the 11th, isn't it?
I think one of the games Arsenal have got is Brighton, and I don't know. I can't remember who they. It must be Manchester City. Then it's the first leg of the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And then I think they've got Brighton, and then it's the second leg of the quarterfinals. So I don't know who they've got sort of after that. But
imagine the energy they're going to have to play in them games, you know. And there's us going to Atlanta, you know, like, and as good as Atlanta
do you not listen to the question? I said talk about the Champions League, but right, not the Europa League.
I won't talk about it. I'm using it for our advantage. I don't care about anything. All my mind is even the Champions League. All I'm thinking about is what advantage is Liverpool going to get out of this?
The Premier League, So, Mike,
Just to let you know, City's game in between the two Madrid games is Luton at home.
Oh, shit.
But even so, you know, it's still a game to focus on, isn't it? And, you know, and we found ourselves, Pete, that sometimes we've come back after a hard European game.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to sort of, you'll pick your level up, especially if you've had to put a lot of energy into the European games. It will be interesting. So, Mike, what did you make of it?
Of the Champions League draw?
In terms of how it could affect us.
I think Arsenal go out. I just think Arsenal go out. I just don't think they know how to play the top teams. In the big things, this team, I don't think they've got the experience to do that. I think they go out. I think City will calmly go through.
I think they'll beat Bayern.
You know what will be a big factor? There's no German fans allowed for the Arsenal game.
Is that right?
Yeah, UEFA banned them from the next game because they threw fireworks on the pitch.
Whoa!
There's no German fans allowed at the Emirates.
Whoa!
It's going to be, what is it, 60 odd thousand just full of Arsenal fans? Like,
well, I guess all we want is we want them to get as knackered as possible, maybe get as many injuries as possible. and staying as long as they can without winning the trophy, don't we? That's essentially what we want.
That's it. So what did you make of it, Pete?
You look like tracking ties, all of them. I think City did a job on Madrid last year, didn't they? I think they, was it 5-1 on aggregates or something? They battered them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just fancy Madrid will be a little bit more savvy this time.
A lot younger now, aren't they?
Pardon?
They're a lot younger now.
Yeah.
Madrid.
Yeah. As I say, Arsenal, Bayern, it depends how it goes in Germany, to be honest. And they're a funny side at the minute, Bayern. They can play really well and still concede goals. So my only worry is if they both get through, that means at least one of them's getting to the final. But
to be honest, Pete, you know, as much as I don't really want that, I would take that if it helped us win the league.
If it helped, yeah. Well, at the end of the day, we watch games that don't involve us, and we might side with one team or the other, but we can't control it, can we? And we just have to go with what happens. So if that's the case and they both get to the semi, let's look at the silver line and think, like you said, well, that's another extra game, massive games that they've got to play, and it might just work in our favour. So if I could have that choice now and say one of them gets the final, but we win the league, I'd take it all day.
Yeah. Me too. So now you can talk about the Europa League draw. So if you actually look at the Europa League draw, we've been drawn against Atlanta. We're a home first. And then if we get past Atlanta, we've got the possibility of Benfica, possibly, probably them, I would think. You know, away from home away from home first in the semi final.
Yeah, great draw. You couldn't have picked it any better, Les, could you? Keeping away from the Italian teams, to be honest, for the I think I'd rather play an Italian team over one leg than over the two. I think we're much better than both Roma and AC Milan. But like, I think Roma's a horrible place to go to. So let Leverkusen have the pleasure of that, you know. But I think you couldn't have picked, if you'd have picked both draws, you couldn't have picked them any better, could you, really? The only thing you could have said is, I wish we'd have played the away at Atlanta first rather than at home. But you know what? We can do enough to them at home and then damage them away, to be honest. I'm not that fearful of Atlanta, to be honest. I think Liverpool are a better team than Atlanta.
Yeah, Mike, Atlanta the sixth currently in Serie A. You know, as Tom just said there, you know, you couldn't have asked really for a better draw yet. We'd have preferred to have been home, you know, second. You know what I mean? But then, you know, you've got the prospect, if you get through, of Benfica or Marseille. And I think Benfica are probably the favourites in that tie.
Yeah, Atalanta, as opposed to Atlanta.
I'm saying it the scout way, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, Atalanta. We hammered them. We played them when Jota first signed, didn't he? We got a hat trick over there, didn't it?
Yeah.
During the, when there was no crowds in. But sixth in the Italian league. You've got to fancy us to beat them. I'm quite happy we're at home first because I'm on a leaving do for the second leg, so I wouldn't be able to go. And then, yeah, you fancy Benfica. They're second in the league. Marseille are seventh in their league, so. You do fancy Benfica, but I don't really know where the Portuguese league pitches against everyone other than PSG in the French league, really, in terms of quality. So you look at it, it's a good draw, isn't it? We avoided the two big Italian teams. We avoided Leverkusen till the final. But we've got to do our job, really. There's no point, you know, no point going, oh, it's great we've got that. We've got to beat them, haven't we? We've got to beat everyone we're put in front of.
That's right.
And just do our job and let the rest happen.
Pete, I know everybody's sort of pointing that, you know, when you look at the other half of the draw, that it could be, you know, Leverkusen playing Liverpool in the final. But there's the other scenario as well for people like me and you, who are a bit geekish when we look at Liverpool's history, that we've won, you know, two of our wins against in the old UEFA Cup, if you want to call it that, which is now the Europa League, have been against teams that we've then subsequently beat to win the Champions League or the European Cup, in Borussia Mönchengladbach in 73,
yeah,
and then winning the European Cup in 77, and then Bruges in the UEFA Cup in 76. And the European Cup in 78. And with both Roma and AC Milan being in the other half of the draw, that is another possibility that, and a good omen, as you know, I like, that if they got through to the final, we played them, that could continue that pattern.
Yeah, like Mike says, I'm glad we avoided the two bigger names from Italy. If only for the travelling fans, because they're not nice places to go to, especially Rome. I think Bergamo, where Atalanta are, is a little bit more I'm trying to be diplomatic, Sam. I'm sure the atmosphere will be hot over there in Italy. But it's like you say, we just have to get through, and we can't control what's going on in the other half of the draw anyway. I mean, no one's mentioned West Ham yet. West Ham might do a job on Leverkusen. You just don't know. You know, and that'll be fun getting the ferry over to Dublin with a load of Cockneys, won't it? That'll be fun. But you just have to take it as it comes. As I say, I'm glad. Probably if we could have picked any one team, to play in the next round, we'd have probably all plumped for Atalanta. And that's not being disrespectful. It's just looking at the other team because it's quite a strong lineup, you know, that's left. And at this stage in the competition, that's what you'd expect, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's a, you know, April comes and, you know, what an exciting month that's going to be. But next up is the FA Cup quarterfinal away at Man United. So, Pete, have you got your pen and paper out and predicted your starting 11?
Well, I've gone, obviously, Kells will stay in goal. I've got Bradley, Kwanzaa, Virgil and Robbo. I think it'll be too soon for Ibu to come back. And then I've got Endo, Maka, Szoboszlai, Salah, Nunes, Diaz.
Okay, Tom, you've heard Pete name is what he thinks the team will be. Have you got any differences to that?
No, not at all. Only if the only one is if Konate's fit. If Konate's fit, I'd see Konate go in. I don't think he'd play. You never know. He might throw Joe Gomez if Gomez is fit, might he?
I think Joe Gomez will definitely start. And I think the fact that he was taken off at half time last night indicates to me that he will definitely start on Sunday. And my guess would probably be at left back. I don't know whether you'd agree with that. Joe Gomez, left back, Mike, in your favourite position.
So, I thought you were still talking to Tom. When he was picked against Man City at left back, I said, I don't know if it was on a podcast, but I certainly said, I can't see that happening. I was wrong. And he picked him because of Foden. And he did a brilliant job. And Garnacho's their informed player, and he's playing down the right. And I wonder whether he might make the same move there, and especially given that Robbo played the whole game. I wonder whether we'll see Gomez at left back on Sunday as well.
Yeah, I definitely think Gomez will start, Pete. For me, it's just which side does he play him? Does he play him right back? And there's a possibility he could play him right back because he'd have a bit more experience on the right hand side next to Kwanzaa, and then Robbo could come in on the left. So it will be a toss up for me, that one. Can you see that happening?
I still think Connor will be first choice right back, to be honest, for Sunday. So the only other position is, as you mentioned, will he fit in left back? I'd rather see him as at one of the full back positions and centre back, to be honest. And I know Kwanzaa played what 75 minutes last night, but it was a pretty easy game for the centre backs. I mean, Virgil came on and I can't remember him breaking sweat, to be honest. So I think I think Bradley will start at right back. I think he'll get the nod. And I think, like you say, if there is any question of Joe playing, he might probably bring him in at left back to do what he did against City, like you said.
Tom, I'll go for you first, and let's remember that whatever happens on Sunday, there will be a result. So I'll go to you first for your prediction.
Do you know what? I'm going to go for a big Liverpool win, you know, Les. I'm going to fancy Liverpool to win 3-1, you know. I think we're too strong for them up front, and we're too strong for them in midfield. Virgil's back on at his imperious best. And you know what? And they've got Harry Maguire coming back. Can you imagine Harry Maguire against Nunes? It's going to be And it's going to be an accident waiting to happen, isn't it? Like, you know, so I can see Liverpool winning 3-1, to be honest.
Mike, what are you going for, mate?
It's interesting. If you remember the United home game, when they just literally shut up shop from day one, they can't do that today. So they were short of players and they shut up shop and they managed to get it over the line for a point. They can't do that in this game. And that hopefully will play into our hands. We've got to fancy our chances. I think we'll win. Do I think it'll be big? I think it might be like 2-1 or something like that. I can see us even them scoring first, but then us running the game and doing it. But to be honest, we ought to fancy ourselves to get a clean sheet and go and just take them out, really.
Pete?
Yeah, I was favouring 2-0 for us. I think it might be maybe tight and cagey first half, but I think, like Mike said, and yourself, were strong. You know, we're stronger than midfield, and with the attackers we've got, especially with Mo back, I think we can hurt them. So I'm going for 2-0.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, Pete. I'm going for a 2-0 win for Jürgen's boys and a place in the semi-final. I think, you know, I think the game could be quite tight, you know, in the first maybe 15, 20 minutes. But if United, you know, dare to try and open up, you know, as Mike said, you know, with the likes of, you know, Nunes and Diaz and, you know, Salah, we're backed up by Szoboszlai and McAllister. You know, we could really hurt them. So I'm going for a 2-0 win for the Reds. And before we finish tonight's podcast, it's over to Mike to give us a bit of an update on March of the Day, which this time next week will be gearing up to start. So tell us, Mike, the latest.
We'll have started. We'll have started. This time next week, we will be walking across Saddleworth Moor in the pitch black, which some of you guys have already done. Certainly, Tom, you've done that. Mm-hmm. Walking across Saddleworth Moor in the pitch black on our way to Oldham, who are nicely going to open up for us at 10 o'clock at night. Oh, listen, it's just growing. It's growing. We've got over 800 people taking part. I passed our mate Ben his shirt. He turned up at Bradford today to get his shirt. We spent the day at Bradford City sorting T-shirts out, putting them in packages to be sent out. So yours are in the post. It's completely mad what's happening. The biggest news today is that they moved the women's Manchester Derby to the Saturday. So Steph, obviously Stephen's wife, has corralled the whole of their squad, their women's players and staff, to come over to Liverpool to walk the exact stage that you guys are walking. So there'll be 40 of them. We know where quite a lot of people are now taking part. So Jill Scott's going to be over there. Paul Scholes is going to be doing that. Well, he'll be walking right now. Next week, he's going to do Saddleworth Moor up to Oldham, and then he's coming down to Man United over to Salford with Licky Butt. It's just mad. BBC are going to be covering it everywhere, right from the start. We now got Kevin Sinfield's joining at Wigan or around Wigan. Rob Burrow's doing the first bit with his wife and family. It's Looney Tunes today. We literally folded and packed 500 T-shirts today to be sent out to various people. It's mad. It's brilliant. It's superb. Bradford City, because we're going to be there for about an hour and a half before it starts. They're selling space on their screen to local businesses to you know, good wishes. But we're putting loads of videos on there, and we've got some really big. Now we're not telling anybody who they are, but we've got some really big names that have done some videos, wishing everyone good luck. And those once everybody leaves there, all those videos will go out on social media and be able to see it. It's fantastic, and to date we've raised, including gift aid, over £72,000 for the Derby Rimmer M&D Foundation. We started off with a target of 50,000. It's going to be over 100,000. And I'll finish by mentioning one thing. We went to Altrincham on Tuesday night. They've got a guy, a Scouser, Mark Maddox, who played for them over 300 times, and he lost his battle with M&D last year. And we did a bucket collection, and we walked around the pitch at half-time. There was only one and a half thousand there. We collected £600 from there. The hospitality at Altrincham was fantastic, and they won 6-1, which was great. So,
Mike, where's Kevin Sinfield walking from? Wigan to where?
Standish to Wigan.
Standish to Wigan. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love him.
Yeah, he's an inspiration, that fella.
Unbelievable.
You know, if there's ever somebody who deserves all the plaudits that they're given for what he's done, you know what I mean? He stands out like a million miles ahead of anybody.
He's a humble man, Les, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. You know, he's somebody who you look at and you couldn't see, you know, anybody having a bad word to say to him, because there's friends and there's Kevin Sinfield. He shows us, basically Kevin Sinfield shows us all up for what friendship is all about.
Yeah. You know, I met him once before at the launch of his film, and you use the right word, humble, there.
Yeah.
Just like Marcus and just like Stephen. They're humble and inspirational, and it's going to be great to have him there with us.
Yeah,
just gives that what's it called, Mike, done it as well. You know, like when you see for what he's done and what he's achieved. You know, like in the cause of MND, he's just phenomenal.
So he was the inspiration for this event, in fact, because we saw what he and Rob and Doddy Weir achieved getting the rugby world together. So we just thought, football world has to be a bigger world. So we have to try and get that. And we've had clubs all around. So we've got signed shirts from Southampton and Arsenal and Tottenham that are nowhere near. We've got Newcastle that are nowhere near the route of that. Bristol Rovers. Nowhere near the route are all getting involved. There was a fantastic piece from Yeovil Town, which is where Marcus currently works, and their CEO and club donated £1,000. It's brilliant. You know, Burnley have come to the fore. They're going to open up at 10:30 at night, give us tea and biscuits and a signed shirt and anything that we need. You know, Salford, fantastic, they're opening up. Manchester United are giving us breakfast when we arrive there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and Liverpool have got a room on for the core team at the end to get some tea and coffee and some drinks if they want it. And Everton, you know, no problem, come down, sign shirt, anything you want. Wigan, Rochdale have got a game. We arrive at 6 o'clock after their game finishes an hour early, and they're going to keep the fan bar open so that it's open when we get there. But spoke to Berry, that's volunteer run these days, but they're opening up for us. They've got no game, but they're opening up for us. Bolton are opening up for us. They don't have a game because they've got too many Australian and Northern Ireland internationals in their team that their game's been cancelled. Clubs just can't do enough for it, and that really shows it. You know, we've got people from the PFA walking. We've got Oliver Kay in our core team, who's from the Athletic, and we've got about seven or eight. We've reunited the old Wigan strike force of Stuart Barlow and Simon Howarth, and it's fantastic. And Stuart Barlow's been sending YouTube videos of the two of them scoring in the same game against Scunthorpe. And you know, we've got a WhatsApp group, and it's just the best. You know, people who have got a great history of football, but in with people who are just normal Joe public, and everyone is going to be great mates by the time this finishes. And I will say one thing. Jamie Hoyland was supposed to be part of the team. He's just taken on a job as a scout at West Ham. Well, it's the international week, and they want him to go and scout in Holland, so he's had to withdraw from the core team. But rather than just do that, he's done his own walk today from Bury to Burnley, two clubs he played for, and some of our walkers went, right, well, we'll come and walk with you. So they've done their own walk today. Rather than just say, I can't do it, they've stepped forward and done it.
Brilliant, man. Can you tell us which form of Reds are taking part as well?
So we've got Don Matteo, Chris Kirkland. We've got Jay Spearing, Neil Mellor, Martin Kelly, Stephen Darby. And we've also been told we're waiting to find out where and when they will walk, that we've got Dean Saunders, Emil Heskey, who else have we got? Steve Staunton, Jamie Redknapp. We've got 11 or 12, I believe, ex-Reds taking part. So, fantastic.
Brilliant, that, Mike. Absolutely brilliant. So, on that note, we wish everybody who's taking part in the walk the best of luck. It's for a brilliant cause. Just look out for the links that are going to be coming up on Twitter and Facebook if you'd like to make a donation to the charity. All the money that you make, even if it's only 50 pence, will be, you know, gratefully received. And hopefully that, you know, that a lot of money is raised. And I can just say, I've known Stephen Darby for a number of years. He was a great lad. He came to a number of our functions, both to our dinners and to a number of our meetings as guest speakers to do a Q&A. He's a former winner of the Ian Frodsham Young Player of the Year Award. He's one of the nicest lads you could ever wish to meet. And I can't believe that he's been struck down by this illness, because it's a cruel, cruel world. And anybody who suffers by this illness, we need to find a cure for it, because it's a debilitating and horrible illness to have. And you can donate any money at all, please do. On that note, I'll end this edition of The Late Flag. Thanks to Mike, Tom and Pete for joining me tonight. And as I always end the show by saying, justice for the 97. You'll never walk alone, and don't bite the sun. Until next time, goodbye.